It's time to push to talk.
And welcome. This is EAA Radio on 93.3 FM and EAARadio.net around the world. I am Magneto Mel, and I'm sitting here this morning with Nicholas Georgiev. Is that how you say your last name?
That is correct.
And what do you do with aviation? You want to tell a little bit about what your affiliation is?
Well, I work for the National Park Service at Dayton Aviation Heritage National Historical Park, located in Dayton, Ohio. And I am the management assistant for the park and the National Park Service agency lead for our exhibit here at Oshkosh.
Okay, now Dayton, Ohio's, that's not necessarily the first thing that comes to mind for a lot of people when they think of aviation. Why Dayton?
That is correct. When most people think of the Wright brothers, they immediately think of North Carolina, the Outer Banks, and of course their great flight,
Kitty Hawk
in 1903, December 17th, there at 10:35, and of course the iconic picture there, and it's just a great end state for what they wanted to achieve. But what a lot of people do not realize is that they really are from Dayton, Ohio. And really, they used their bicycling businesses to finance their love and passion for developing a heavier-than-air aircraft. And, of course, they did all that experimentation and design work back in Dayton. But they actually went to Kitty Hawk because that had the conditions, as you know, that to allow them to actually perfect the plane and fly it there. But they took all that experimentation and came back to Dayton and to work on. And it's kind of a neat story is that they talked about with them perfecting the airplane back in Dayton and working on it, is that they actually had to look for an area to where they could actually fly because there were no airports yet created, and all they had basically were farming fields, very rural area. And they actually found a person by the name of Mr. Huffman, who actually owned a piece of ground that they knew as a family friend that they could actually felt that they could conduct their experiments at. And when they went to Mr. Huffman, he kind of looked at them and said, well, I'm not sure what you boys really want to do, but as long as you ensure that the gates are shut, and if you take the cows out, you put the cows back in, and my adjoining farmers don't complain, you're fine. And so that's really became the world's first airport.
And now they get the flying field named after.
That is correct. That piece of
the
farmland.
The Huffman Prairie Flying Field in Dayton.
That is correct.
And who owns that now?
Well, it's actually owned by the United States Air Force. And if you were to visit it today, there is the Huffman Prairie Flying Field Interpretive Center has an overlook where you can actually see the original field. It is maintained in its 100% integrity. It's there's no buildings on it. It looks just like the way the Wright brothers conducted their experiments back in the early 1900s. In fact, I would like to point out that the Air Force has taken such great care of that piece of historic property that they were recently recognized this year by the Department of Defense for Heritage Preservation. They were the only ones that were selected in that category. It's a very unique honor, and I applaud the Air Force for taking something that's actually adjacent to their active runway at Wright-Patterson and preserving it. They easily could have used it for other purposes, but they elected to preserve that history.
Which is something that we need more of in terms of aviation. And that's what your Heritage National Historical Park is about, is preservation and honoring a lot of this traditions and histories in aviation, or?
Yes. As far as at Dayton Aviation, we actually focus on three great Daytonians, Wilbur and Orville Wright, for their accomplishments in aviation, and of course the Miami Valley region for their for aviation. In addition, we also recognize another Daytonian, Paul Lawrence Dunbar, who's an African-American poet laureate, and he's part of our site as well. And he actually has a great quote, "What dreams we have and how they fly," and it's very symbolic of what the Wrights also were trying to achieve.
Well, okay, so now we've talked a little bit about the history of the Wright brothers involved in this, and what other big event? Of course, we're celebrating the centennial. I know you've got some information about that big historic event, the centennial of the first transcontinental flight, Calbraith Perry Rogers, right? The flight of the VinFizz.
That is correct.
So why is that other, again, the Centennial, but you've got some interesting news about how that came about.
Well, the VinFizz actually is a grape drink that the Armour Meatpacking Company wanted to actually get into soft drink business. Is that during that time of period of the country, trying to get away from alcoholic type beverages and to give other alternatives, a lot, the soft drink industry was really starting to flourish. And the Armour Meatpacking Company felt that that would be a great way to diversify their business and branch out to something new. And in dealing with William Randolph Hearst in newspaper business, is that they thought, wow, what a great way. They felt that to launch this new drink.
And that's how we got the California destination.
Yes, yep, yes, okay. yes. Yeah, absolutely.
It all comes together.
Is that to figure out that they needed this big marketing blitz. And so as they looked around, Cal Rogers himself, being a little bit flamboyant in his personality, when the Armour company put out this contest that William Randolph Hearst was encouraging, Cal thought, you know, this could be the first marketing use of an aircraft. It's a new, novelty type invention. Let's go ahead and use it to fly coast to coast. And when it first came out, there weren't many takers because it was still new and is quite dangerous. And so Cal agreed to go ahead and do the trip and signed up for it. And so to speak, the rest is history. We do have within the Federal Pavilion, we do have an exhibit. We have the Wright EX. Cal had a Wright B modified to his specifications just for this. It's the only Wright EX that the Wrights ever produced. We have a replica on that in the Federal Pavilion. And in addition, we also have some other exhibits on there. And the thing that's really neat is that one of our exhibitors who is supporting us with some information on a 1911 Wright glider, because that's another centennial this year, he actually has the jig, the rib jig, that was made to produce the Wright EX that we have on display. So there's some really neat artifacts there as well to come and take a look at.
Yeah, and something we were talking about a little bit, and what people will hear if they continue to listen to my show today, is a little piece of that history that a lot don't know is Cal Rogers was deaf. And, of course, in 1911, we didn't have radio in airplanes, not until 1933, so this was never anything to know. So this is a big centennial year for the Deaf Pilot Association and a lot of others because of that. So that flight was a lot of firsts, marketing firsts and first transcontinental flight, you know, the big entrance of the deaf in aviation history. And I know there's some folks that are talking about trying to put together a tribute flight.
Mm-hmm. Well, hopefully
later on this year.
Hopefully, they won't follow it totally because Cal, as they sometimes say, he crashed his way across the United States.
I think we might have a little bit better navigation equipment today as well. So,
well, that's also something else is that was where they were talking about the use of the iron compass as part of that route because obviously they didn't have a lot of navigational instruments out there like we have today, GPS and satellites and so on. And they also didn't have maps for pilots back
right.
then. And so the iron compass ended up being the railway. And so he would follow railroad tracks to his destinations.
I follow railroads.
Yes, yes. And then, but now when they came to a juncture, and he would have actually large pieces of white cloth kind of pointing it like an arrow in the direction he needed to go. So if there were two or three decision points, he would look for the piece of white cloth, and that way he knew which way to go. And then, of course, the railroad company also got into the act because they actually carried his spare parts. They had a car for him, so when he landed, and so on, he had a place to stay and a little bit of home with him as well.
Okay. Well, I mean, it's not coming up until the fall because he did the flight from September through November. I think
Correct.
It took quite a
Correct.
While. So, mm-hmm. And then what else you got? You also have some stuff going on here on the field, right?
Yes. In addition to that, we're the Park Service is going back to our roots in some traditional venues. Is that we're doing a campfire program on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday night at the Youth Pavilion in Paul's Woods, located in the campground. Okay. And we certainly, it's billed as a family venue. We encourage everyone to come. The program will start at 7. We'll run about 30 minutes. The first one will be just a general information overview of the Park Service on Tuesday. The VinFizz program, which I encourage a lot of people to come to, it's going to be very fun and interactive. That will be on Wednesday. And then we will end up with Friday with a presentation on 1911 Wright Glider.
And where can people find information for listeners that maybe aren't on the field, that didn't make it to Osh today? Where can they find some more information about who you are and what you do?
Well, everything doing with the campground is located on the EAA website, mm-hmm. On there in the forum section.
And the Heritage Park?
And the on that, if they actually type in Dayton Aviation Heritage, you can do a Google search on it, and we come up normally as the first Google search for the national park, and that will take you to our homepage.
Okay, and then and you personally, what's your are you over there with the campgrounds?
Yes, actually during... During the day, from 9 to 5, we'll be at the Federal Pavilion. We have actually some great simulators. We have 1911 simulator sponsored by the National Aviation Heritage Alliance, and that is a Wright B that gives you a College Park experience. We have a 1903 simulator that gives you the Kitty Hawk experience. And then we also have, for a few days starting tomorrow, we also have virtual reality goggles that you can actually experience flying a 1905 Flyer on Huffman Prairie Flying Field.
And that's what you have here?
Yes.
Okay.
At the Federal Pavilion.
Fantastic. Well, this has been Nicholas Georgieff.
Correct.
With the Dayton Aviation Heritage National Historical Park, it's a mouthful, in Dayton, Ohio. And be sure to check them out on the grounds. Nicholas, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you. I enjoyed.
And this is Magneto Mel. You're listening to EAA Radio on 93.3 FM at EAARadio.net around the world.